Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
The suicide bombing attack of a mosque near Maiduguri, Nigeria, killed at least 22 people and wounded 17 Wednesday. The two bombers were female, according to the Associated Press. One detonated a bomb inside, report said. The second bomber waited outside and exploded her bomb while those at prayer tried to escape. Sources say the blast took place early in the morning. Boko Haram, an African Islamic militant group, is known to use girls and women as suicide bombers, sometimes detonating the bombs remotely. One man escaped the destruction because he was late for prayer. Umar Usman saw what happened outside the mosque. "We were just a few meters away from the mosque when a loud bang erupted," he said. "All we could see was dark smoke and bodies littered around." No group or person claimed responsibility for the violence. Maiduguri is seen as the birthplace of Boko Haram and a front line for fighting the terror group. Boko Haram often stages attacks and suicide bombings in the area of Maiduguri. A bus filled with government workers was bombed Wednesday in northwestern Pakistan. A group linked to the Pakistani Taliban is suspected of committing the act. Jim Dresbeck has the report.
A bomb exploded on a crowded bus Wednesday in the northwestern Pakistan town of Peshawar, killing 15 and injuring 30. Most of the victims were government employees. Video of the attack showed the explosion destroyed the bus. One eyewitness said, "The roof of the bus was completely blown off by the bomb. I saw many dead bodies and severely injured people being rushed to the hospital." A police investigation concluded the bomb was hidden under a seat in the bus. An organization close to the Pakistani Taliban said it carried out the attack. The organization said the bombing was revenge for death sentences given to 13 of its fighters on Tuesday, according to Al Jazeera. The town of Peshawar has witnessed violence in the past. Bombings and shootings by the Pakistani Taliban have taken place there in the past months. I'm Jim Dresbeck.
Next, Kathleen Strzok brings us the details of a North Korean criminal court's sentencing of a United States college student.
North Korea has sentenced an American college student to 15 years hard labor for trying to steal a political banner. Otto Warmbier of Ohio was arrested in January at the airport as he was leaving the country after a budget youth tour. Last month, the 21-year-old student at the University of Virginia appeared before journalists in Pyongyang. He admitted to removing a political banner from the hotel where the tour group was staying. The North Korean court convicted Warmbier of a crime to impair the unity of North Korean people after entering it as a tourist. He received the sentence in a one-hour trial. Statements of Westerners arrested by North Korea are widely considered to be false. When released, detainees usually say their confessions were made at the urging of North Korean officials. During Warmbier's confession, he said the mother of a friend offered him a used car worth $10,000 in exchange for the banner. She wanted to display it as a trophy in her church. The woman said if he was caught, Warmbier's mother would get $200,000, he said.
The Kurdistan Freedom Falcons say they are responsible for a recent car bombing in the capital city of Turkey. The group says more bombings and violence could take place in the future. Here again is Jim Dressback.
A Kurdish militant group claimed responsibility for the suicide car bombing Sunday in Ankara that killed 37 people. The Kurdistan Freedom Falcons, or TAK, warned that more attacks are possible. TAK is an offshoot of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, or PKK. The PKK has warred with the Turkish government since 1978. TAK said the attack was in response to ongoing military operations in southeast Turkey. Sunday's car bomb exploded in a busy city square near foreign embassies and government buildings. It was the third bombing in the capital during the past 6 months. TAK also said it was responsible for a bombing in February. That attack in Ankara killed 29 people. The BBC reported Germany closed its embassy in Ankara due to possible terror attacks. The Germans also closed its consulate in a school in Istanbul on Thursday. I'm Jim Dressback.
Problems with a system designed to limit sharp stock price drops has led to a change in the head of China's stock regulator and plans to ease the way stocks are offered to the public for the first time are delayed. Mario Ritter has the story.
China will not relax government control over the stock market, said a new securities regulator. Those controls include how stocks are offered for public sale. Official control over first-time stock offerings, known as initial public offerings or IPOs, will continue. Government-supported trading will also continue. Liu Xiyu is the new chairman of the China Securities Regulatory Commission, or CSRC. The CSRC is the government agency in charge of overseeing the country's stock markets. Liu said recently that reforms in the IPO system will not take place soon. The reform would force the CSRC to give up vetting the plans of companies seeking to raise funds through IPOs. The plan would give companies that offer stocks to the public greater independence to set the IPO stock price. The information would be registered with the stock exchange. Government control over IPO vetting had led to serious corruption. At least three senior regulatory officials are being investigated. They include Yao Gong. He is a CSRC vice chairman at the regulator in charge of IPO issues, who was placed under investigation for serious disciplinary violations. Two other officials dealing with IPOs, Li Liang and Li Jiling, have been detained for the same reason. The decision to delay action by the CSRC will slow market reform. That is what Oliver Rouet, a professor of finance and accounting at the China Europe International Business School, says, "I wish the government could change its mindset on governance and let the stock market run by itself. Frequent intervention from the government does not help," he said. The new CSRC chief also said government-run organizations, which support the market during price drops, will continue to operate. "There were no plans to stop them from playing their roles," Liu said. China makes no secret that it directly intervenes in the market to support stock prices if they fall too far. The government-run China Securities Finance Corporation Limited has played a major part in supporting the market. This was especially true after stock prices on China's major exchanges sharply dropped in June 2015. The fund has invested in almost 600 publicly traded companies, according to Bloomberg data. Last month, an attempt to control market behavior by halting trading when prices fall too far did not work. The CSRC was forced to withdraw its rules. The government responded by replacing the group's chief, Xiao Gang, with Liu. At least 700 Chinese companies have planned IPOs, but some of them might be delayed, sources said. I'm Mario Ritter.
A Pennsylvania man has admitted to stealing online nude photos and videos from female celebrities. Those television and movie stars include Jennifer Lawrence, Kate Upton, Selena Gomez, Ariana Grande, Kirsten Dunst, and Kim Kardashian. Also, Vanessa Hudgens, Rihanna, Lea Michele, and Hilary Duff. This information comes from Variety, which covers the entertainment industry. The FBI said Ryan Collins, 36, of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, admitted guilt this week to two criminal charges. Both charges are for illegal use of computers, the FBI said. The FBI's announcement did not name the victims, but it said Collins obtained email and other private information from 122 people. Most are female celebrities, the FBI said. The case has been called Celebgate. The FBI said it has no evidence that Collins posted the nude photos and videos of female stars. Those images began appearing on the internet in 2014. The FBI said this is how Collins operated. He would send the celebrities emails that appeared to be from Apple and Google. The emails asked for sign-in and password information. Collins used this information to download entire Apple iCloud accounts, including photos and videos, the FBI said. Federal prosecutors will recommend that Collins receive an 18-month prison sentence, according to a government press release. I'm Bruce Alpert.
More than one-third of U.S. innovators are born outside the United States. Only 13.5% of all U.S. residents are immigrants. But a new report says 35% of residents with a doctorate degree in science and mathematics are immigrants. Pete Musto has more.
The report came from the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, or ITIF, in February. The ITIF is an organization that studies how technology affects the world. Adam Nager is an economic policy analyst at the ITIF. He said, U.S. innovation really depends on individuals born outside of the U.S. Immigration has been a major issue for the campaigns of the 2016 presidential candidates. But the candidates have rarely talked about how high-skilled and low-skilled or illegal immigrants are different. The ITIF report does not examine the effects of low-skilled or illegal immigrants on the U.S. But Nager said the report does show the value of bringing in the best and brightest engineers from around the world and the benefits that they bring to the U.S. economy. The more of them we can get, the better, he said. The other two-thirds of American innovators are mostly white men, the report shows, but that does not mean they are highly intelligent young men who never finished college, like Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg. The ITIF found the average age of these innovators is 47. Also, most of them have at least one advanced degree. To collect information for the report, the ITIF spoke with almost 1,000 people. All of those people have won national awards for inventions or are working towards international patents on their ideas. These inventions and ideas are all in the fields of information technology, life or material sciences, and advanced technology. The results of the report are a topic of interest for the White House. The White House has honored 11 immigrant innovators so far. Additionally, President Barack Obama spoke about the importance of innovation in his final State of the Union speech in January. President Obama also spoke at a conference at SXSW, or South by Southwest, in Austin, Texas, earlier in March. The conference was part of an event that mixes live music and displays by several technology companies. Researchers working on the report expected to find few female and U.S.-born minority innovators, but researchers were surprised at how low those numbers were. Only 12% of U.S. innovators are women. Just 8% of innovators are Asians, African Americans, Hispanics, Native Americans, and other minorities born in the U.S. I'm Pete Musto.
France has become the first country to ban supermarkets from throwing away unsold food. Legislators passed the law in February. The law requires supermarkets to donate unsold food to charities and food banks. If supermarkets do not obey the law, they face a $4,000 fine. The new law is part of France's efforts to rethink consumption practices. Each year, France throws away about 7 million tons of food. That is one-fifth of the amount of food bought each year. Along with individual consumers, restaurants and stores add to the food waste. Other European countries are also making efforts to reduce food waste. In Denmark, a new waste supermarket has opened, where customers can buy surplus or leftover food for cheaper prices. Arash Derambarsh is a municipal councillor in a Paris suburb. He started a petition for Parliament to adopt the supermarket food waste law. The situation is very simple, he said. On the one hand, we have supermarkets that throw away kilos of unsold food every day. On the other, faced with this absurdity, we have millions of poor people in France. Derambarsh wrote a book called Manifesto Against Waste. In the book, he wrote about his time as a poor student, barely able to pay for rent. I was hungry and ashamed of admitting it, he said. I wanted to turn it into a positive experience, so others would not end up in this situation. Derambarsh is now campaigning for the European Union to adopt similar supermarket waste laws. He is also urging the United States and other countries to adopt such measures too. Yet the reaction among charities and supermarkets in France shows how complex the issue of food waste really is. Some people have welcomed the new law. Louise Saint-Germain is president of a small non-governmental organization called, in English, A Hand Stretched Out for Tomorrow. She said the increase in donations will allow her group to feed more people and provide a more diversified food basket. But others are worried that the law will lead to more donations than they can handle. Aline Chassagnot manages a Salvation Army store. We simply don't have the technical and logistical ability to distribute more food to more people, and we are not the only ones, she said. Chassagnot said France needs to consider larger issues related to consumption and sharing. Yes, there's waste, and there are enough poor people around, she said. But really taking into account a person's needs and dignity might mean another way of thinking that's not so simple. Many large supermarkets in France argue that the law doesn't really change much. The director of one Carrefour supermarket in western Paris says her store has been donating unsold food to charities for years. Nothing is wasted, the director said. In the kitchen, chefs put day-old bread products into syrup, then pour almond paste on them, turning them into new desserts. Rotten raspberries are picked out of unsold tubs, and the good ones are reused in tarts. And food that is damaged or past its shelf life is turned into biofuel, the director added. The biofuel helps power supermarket trucks. But other French stores reportedly put bleach onto unsold food. That chemical makes the food inedible.
In this week's episode of Everyday Grammar, we're going to talk about two common types of double negatives. A double negative is when you use two negative words in the same clause of a sentence. Let's take a real-world example. In 2012, President Obama spoke at the United Nations about the Iran nuclear issue.
America wants to resolve this issue through diplomacy. And we believe that there is still time and space to do so. But that time is not unlimited.
What did the president mean when he said, not unlimited? Mr. Obama's double negative statement confused many people. English teachers do not like double negatives because they can be confusing and illogical. Starting in elementary school, teachers tell students to avoid them. But many native English speakers still use double negatives. There are two types of double negatives. The first kind of double negative is when two negative words form a positive statement. When President Obama said, "Time is not unlimited," the negative "not" and the negative prefix "un" cancel each other out. What Mr. Obama meant is that time is limited for Iran. Politicians, lawyers, and diplomats sometimes use this type of double negative in sensitive situations. The second type of double negative is when two negatives form a stronger negative. For example, "I don't know nothing." When you place a verb between two negative words, the result is usually a stronger negative. But if you told an English teacher, "I don't know nothing," the teacher would probably correct you with, "I don't know anything." This kind of double negative is taboo in professional and academic situations. Some people see it as a sign of being poorly educated. But English speakers have been using double negatives for centuries. The first English translation of the Bible by King James used double negatives. William Shakespeare even used a triple negative in his play Richard III. Shakespeare wrote, "I never was nor never will be." Was Shakespeare wrong? It was Robert Loth who decided the double negative had no place in English grammar. Robert Loth was a leader in the Church of England. In 1762, he wrote a book called A Short Introduction to English Grammar. Mr. Loth proposed many restrictions on English grammar, many of them inspired by Latin. Over the years, his rules became the standard for teaching grammar all over the English-speaking world. But the double negative is alive and well, especially in informal speech. In fact, some of the richness of the English language comes from ignoring the rules. Listen for the double negative in the song Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones. Would the song have the same effect if Rolling Stones singer Mick Jagger had said, "I cannot get any satisfaction"? And surely Robert Loth would not approve of pop star Rihanna's use of the double negative in her song called Numb. The double negative is just one example of the difference between how English is taught in school and how it is sometimes spoken. So next time you get frustrated with English grammar, don't blame your teacher, blame Robert Loth. And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.